Brotherhood, multiplication, restoration. We are Sin Network. We're a family planting churches together. Journey with us as we hear from church planters all across North America, discovering what it really takes to plant churches everywhere for everyone. This week, I'm with John Onwuchekwa in Atlanta's West End to talk about Cornerstone Church.
What's up, man?
What's up, how you doing? Brother? You doing? Good, man. I'm doing good.
Hey, how's Chandra?
Good. Family's doing well. Chandra and Ava, great. Spent the past week solo. Just Mr. Dad, yeah.
Mr. Dad. Yeah, so how's the weight of just pastoring, you know, daddy, new dad? How old is Ava now?
She'll be two.
2 years
in,
old.
In April, yeah. Okay. So it's crazy.
So, how's that been?
So it's good. Like, she's at that age where, you know, she has just enough words to like tell you what she wants, but she doesn't really know that it's like, if I don't get what I want, it's because you said no and not because you can't hear me, right? So so her volume just raises, right? No, I hear you, I just disagree with you. So
really want to be really clear. I love it.
Yeah,
I love it. Why Atlanta? Why? Yeah. What's unique about Atlanta? What's your spiel to what's significant of you planting the church here in Atlanta?
Yeah, yo, Atlanta is a city that's like full of a strong minority presence, but it's a progressive one, right? So you have all the historically black colleges, the birth of the civil rights movement, just so much history of progress and advancement for a disenfranchised group just kind of here. Mm-hmm. Makes it a city where people look to it as a place for influence.
Okay.
Colleges, man, to have so many schools, right? You got the AUC, you've got Emory, Georgia Tech, Georgia State, just all these schools here localized in a city like Atlanta where it's not like Baylor where I went to school, right? Yo, Baylor was a great school in Waco.
Yeah.
So when folks got done, people didn't build lives there before Chip and Joe and the Gaines came through, right?
But I'm glad that Waco has changed. Chip Chip and Joe has helped save, because before it was David Koresh.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, it was David Koresh.
The branch. That's
When they came in, they've helped.
Oh, changed it.
They changed it. Yeah, so, I'm glad.
Yeah.
That's good PR. I mean, that's good marketing.
Yeah, they
need it. Waco needed
We really did. We're glad that we got it. Yeah, I just feel like, man, all of that's here. You know, it's becoming increasingly more diverse.
But why this neighborhood?
So, years ago when we were Blueprint and just kind of saw what the Lord did, you know, we had that small group of folks. And I love telling this story because when it comes to church planting, like, I'm not the traditional church planter that went ahead and kind of launched this, right? I joined in with the work. Richard was the one that went through, and it's like he saw Atlanta start to change, right? He saw the Northwest, Northwest, Northeast, and Southeast start to change, and they experienced all this stuff that made folks want to come to Atlanta. But when it came to the Southwest side, nobody wanted to be here.
Right.
Well, back then,
right? Now they do.
And so it was just like there was a forgotten part of the city where you had people that had the same dignity, right, as provided to them by God, as folks in the Northwest, Northeast, and Southwest, but nobody wanted to be there. And man, your prayer that we prayed long ago, right, was, God, we pray that as we start this church, you know, give us the people that nobody else wants. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Richard was the first one, I feel like at the time, to put feet to that and say, all right, Lord, I believe so much that you're going to give us the folks that nobody else wants, that I'm going to go to the people that nobody else wants.
And so
our goal was just to come here and not try to save the West End, but just to say, man, what are ways that we can fold into the fabric of the community here, learn the story, learn the heartaches, and come alongside and serve and see if a gospel presence might be able to restore like family, dignity and hope to a community where all three of those things have been broken down. And historically, it hasn't seemed like the church has focused primarily on restoring those three things to the context.
Yeah. So you talked about like Richard and what he was doing, how he kind of set the, he was more of kind of the apostolic kind of person coming into the neighborhood, you know, early on. And you brought kind of more of that pastoral teacher kind of dynamic. Talk a little bit, you know, what, like, what is that? Like, how did you guys work through that?
You know. So we think that, God's church is God's family. Mm-hmm. And a family is diverse, right? Yeah, There's a lot of folks there. And it's like, just in terms of, all right, what does a church in this community need to thrive? And instead of saying, who's the best person to spearhead that, as if it all depends on them, we said, what does a church need here to thrive? All right. Mm-hmm. All right. John, can you fill that? I'm like, oh, yeah. Richard, can you fill that? All right. Yeah, are there still gaps? And we're like, well, yeah. So then Richard got off the phone. He's like, yo, Mo can fill this gap. I got on the phone. I'm like, yo, Tripp can fill this gap. And we said, all right, this is what a church here needs. And I think we have all of the guys to kind of fill these gaps. Let us go and start this church.
A lot of times we get some of these like parachute. Like, I mean, obviously there's guys that parachute in. We parachuted in, but we parachuted with a team.
Yeah.
Versus some of these guys who just parachute
in.
And obviously, everyone don't have the ability to parachute with a team.
I know.
And sometimes people have to parachute with just them and their spouse, them and their family. I mean, how important.
I know the Apostle Paul did it, all right? Yeah. So it's like, I know that it's been done. Mm-hmm. I personally don't know, like, how? Well, I mean, outside of the grace of God. And I just think, like, of the, you know, Ecclesiastes, right? The first three chapters are all about the world is broken. Nothing that you do is going to work out the way that you hoped that it would. Mm-hmm. And chapter four is like, all right, the world is broken. Nothing's going to work out. Make sure that you don't do it by yourself.
Right.
And I'm like, you know, when we started our church, it was the thing where, you know, things were good, momentum, you know, we're 6 weeks out to launch. And then I get a phone call and my brother dies.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, 6 weeks before we're getting ready to start. And I just think, if I was there by myself and I didn't have four other pastors, like, I had four other pastors that lived in the same neighborhood that I did, that I'd known for over a decade. Mm-hmm. And that first year was incredibly hard.
Yeah.
I just think if I didn't have them and I did it all on my own, I think it would just be impossible. And I think when we're about God's work, like, you know, I'd love to think that my story of hardship was unique, but I remember when we were getting ready to plant Blueprint. Mm-hmm. And your dad.
Yeah.
I remember when Moochie was getting ready to go and his brother died. And it's just like more often than not, I kind of see that's the template. Like Satan likes to work that way. And I think not being ignorant of his schemes, I, with God, I'm just like, why wouldn't you take a team? Yeah.
Let's talk about grief for a quick second. Yeah. I mean, that, because I mean, I, you know, my dad died in 2008. Right, and in 2008, I realized it was September of 2008, September 10th of 2008. Then I realized that was the date, and you know, Braden's birthday, you know, his birthday is September 10th. And I just realized, it hit me this year, you know, that I was celebrating, or you know, the past year, that I was celebrating the 10-year anniversary of my dad's death, and alongside kind of the, you know, my son turning 10. You know, and it's just that tension. You talk about the template, man. How has that been? How has that,
you know? Satan has a template, but God has one too. Like, man, April 10th, 2015, me and Chandra, you know, I mean, you've been with us from the start. You know, we'd been trying to adapt for 4 years and just had horror stories. So we go to Savannah, April 6th, 2015, for vacation for a week. And on the 10th, we're supposed to meet the baby girl that we've been trying to adopt for a year. April 9th, they call us, they say, nah, it's done. April the 10th, we drive back crying because we don't get to adopt the girl. April 14th, 2015, Sam dies. Mm-hmm. Fast forward 2 years, April 6th, Ava's born, premature. Mm-hmm. April 10th, 2015, they call us and say, she's yours. We drive down to the NICU, she's born early, she's in the incubator, she can't breathe on her own. April 14th, the day that Sam died, 2 years later, it's Good Friday. I'm holding my daughter, who's on a breath machine, as I'm reading to her in Noah Wingard, J.I. Packer's chapter about adoption. It's Good Friday. I'm crying because my brother died 2 years ago. I'm crying because it's the day that my savior died 2,000 years ago. And that day, the doctor comes in, and before I know it, whisks her out of my arms and says, today's the day that she's gonna breathe on her own. Takes the breathing thing out of her, and I get to hold her for the first time as she takes her first breaths without being on a machine. The day that Sam took his final breaths, the day that Christ took his last breath. And so it's like, yo, Satan has a template, but God does too, right? Yeah. And so, yeah, man, yeah.
That's huge. And that was the same kind of conclusion I came with, like, that's much of life.
Yeah.
Is that we spend and we grieve our losses, but we celebrate life in there and in the midst of it all.
Yeah. Man.
Speaking of being a good pastor, you're about neighboring. It's about being in the neighborhood, feeling it, the texture. I mean, that was one of the things that we were like really pushing, like live in the neighborhood. Yeah. I mean, what would you say percentage of church-wise kind of live in the neighborhood?
50%.
50%?
Yeah.
Okay. And yeah.
I was more than that, but then as the church grew. So when we first launched, you know, the 57 covenant members that we had when we first launched, it was more like 80%.
Yeah.
Right? But then as the church has grown, I mean, there's been more folks come from inside. But then, like any church, you know, folks.
Why is that so important?
Part of the reason why we can do what we can do is because there's so many good churches in Atlanta right now. So it's we kind of feel the freedom to spend time here on the West End. So the West End has been historically forgotten. And what we're saying is there's so many other churches on the northwest side of town, the northeast side of town, and the southeast side of the town that we as a church want to invest a disproportionate amount of our time and resources to serve the West End. And dropping in to serve the West End doesn't serve the West End the best. The West End is served best by people that live here. Not saying that you can't serve the West End if you don't live here, but we are saying that there's a need for potent service.
Well, John, I remember back you were telling me a while back, it's even about prayer that you guys do on a weekly basis. And I mean, I know you just wrote the book on prayer. You know what I'm saying? It's like the Lord's Prayer, and then Jono's book on prayer. I mean, it's like, you just wrote that.
Yeah.
But what I loved about, like, even just how your parents specifically as a church, you know about that. Talk a little bit. Tell me a little bit more about, like, how you've explained that with prayer in the life of your church.
Yeah. Man, one of the big things that we kind of drive home in the life of our church that people don't think about is what prayer as a church does. It either reaffirms or undermines your belief in the resurrection. Mm-hmm. Preach all that you want to about it. Nothing reaffirms or undermines it more than prayer, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's like this. Yeah, I've been married 12 years. I still don't know where the spoons are in my house. And so, you know, I'll ask Chandra, be like, Chandra, where are the spoons? And she'll say things like, John, we've been married 12 years. You still don't know where the spoons are. And she'll say, what would you do if I weren't here? And, you know, I think in my head, if you weren't here, I mean, I have to look for them, but I'm not good. I'm probably not going to find them. But then I say, but But you are here, so I'm going, why would I trouble myself? You're here, I'm going to trouble for you. And you go through the book of Acts, and in Acts chapter 1 through 6, you just see problems, right? From Christ died, leader left. They've been betrayed by a leader. Ethnic tension in the life of the church. The culture that they live in is hostile. And with every one of those things, what you see is them, they have these prompt and impromptu prayer meetings that they just say, they're like, well, if Christ was not here, well, I guess we'd have to sit down and plan and strategize about how we're gonna, but then it's like they come to the conclusion, no, he's actually here. He got up from the grave. Why would I go and look for the spoons if he's right here and they pray? So what we've said is, if Jesus is really here and we are a church that's built, not off of ideologies or principles that we read in a book, but an event that he's actually here, then we say, if we have problems as a church with all which all churches do, then we just want to make sure that we're constantly praying.
What would you tell me to helping these guys implementing that kind of DNA on prayer in their church?
Okay. It's two things.
Two things. It can't be just one?
No. Okay. But it's two of the same things.
Yeah.
Start a prayer meeting and cement that prayer meeting.
Okay.
So start it. Have a place where you come and pray, but make sure that that's put in stone and don't cancel it, don't move it, because that just shows the importance. And just know, like, it will be the thing that has the least attendance at your church. Start it and cement it, and what you'll see is that, man, as folks who pray, as God answers prayer, you know, it just changes. Anxieties, burdens are lifted. People can feel and sense that lightness. And slowly over time, it'll grow. But yeah, it grows like a tree, right? It's like it's slow. You put that acorn in the ground and leave it there.
That's good.
And just let it grow and watch what God does.
That's good. All right, cool. Any regrets, like when you think about, all right, I would have did this different if God would have said, okay, here, John is ready, I'm going again. Like, what would you do different? What would you definitely do the same? Would you even accept that?
Right.
Would it be like,
so
John?
It's, it's funny, because it's like, I do think God gives us a certain amount of blindness when he calls us to do what it is that we would do. So, man, I would love, like, I'd love to right now, especially being filmed, right, to say, nah, man, if God called me, I'll do the whole thing again.
Yeah.
But there's parts of me that is like, if back then God told me, you know, all the bad things that would take place as a result of this, all the hard things, I think I'd be hard-pressed to say yes, just because, it's hard. So things are different than what I thought they would be, but they're better than I hoped that they would be.
Yeah.
And it's hard to sign up for pain on the front end, but.
Like, yeah, sign me up. Yeah. Give me two of those.
Yeah, but it's, if we had to do it all again, I'd definitely say yes, but my request to God would be, don't give me insight into all the hard things that are gonna come.
Yeah.
So I don't want insight for the next 10 years.
Right.
Just promise me that you'll be faithful.
One of the things that I constantly think about is like, one, we don't appreciate the time when we're in it. I mean, I think about sometimes me, you, James, Mucci, like Sam, like we was just all together, you know, it's just like we didn't, some of the times you don't take advantage of that, but when you think about even the present, right? And, you know, at Sin Network, we talk about, man, we want to plant churches. Yeah. We want to see. And like, I mean, that's hard. I still remember the day that I walked into your office and like after you have planted and I was like, there's an empty room in here. And I was just like, man, we've been doing ministry for over 10 years, all these years together. And then this is going. So a lot of times we think, oh, it's so good and fun to be sending it. But I mean, it's hard.
Sad.
It's sad. It's sad. Loss. And there's a lot of grief.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so how do you handle that with like your team, your staff?
No, I think like what you just said is like, key, man, like we've got to take advantage of the time and just live in the present, man. And so we've had that where Tripp, started the church with him, known him since I was 19. We've prayed for like 12 years, the guy would put us in the same city. We lived in the same neighborhood for 3.5 years and did work, and it was great. And then I called him elsewhere and he moved. And then it's like when folks move, you just sit back and say, man, we took it for granted. And so part of the thing is, man, if brotherhood is really what I want, I'm just trying not to take for granted, you know, the blessings that God, gives. And even, this too. I mean, this time that we get, it's like, I would love, more of this.
Cultivated.
So, yeah. I'm with you. Not for sure.